presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I was looking at something over the weekend, and I came up with an opinion that when it comes to Jake Fromm, who by now, you know, everybody in college football knows something about, but when it comes to Fromm, the local opinion, kind of inside Dog Nation here, and the national opinion, you know, I think it continues to be very, very different. Let me see if I can give you an example as to why I feel that way based on something I read this weekend. USA Today had its ranking of top quarterbacks in college football for 2019. And Jake Fromm comes in at number 5 on that list, behind Trevor Lawrence, who's number 1, Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama at number 2, you had Justin Herbert from Oregon at number 3, you had the Texas quarterback at number 4, and then you had Jake Fromm coming in at number 5. And the writer on this in particular, what he says about Fromm is what I found more interesting than the ranking, because in some form or fashion, we've seen enough draft lists now, we've seen enough college football preseason chatter. We've seen enough of that now to know that Fromm is considered among the top quarterbacks. So where he ranks is not necessarily a big surprise one way or another. You may rank him a little higher. Some people may rank him a little lower. But either way, we know if you're making a list of 5 or 10 or however many top quarterbacks in college football, we know that Fromm is going to be on that list. But it's what the writer Paul Meyerberg says about Fromm that led me to say, wow, nationally, they just think of Fromm really different than we think of him in the state of Georgia here, or kind of within the bubble of Dog Nation. Here's Paul Meyerberg, who says, Fromm finished last season ranked in the top 12 nationally in touchdowns, completion percentage, yards per attempt, and efficiency rating. But listen to these two words here. Meyerberg says, few noticed. Supremely reliable and extremely undervalued, Fromm's national reputation hasn't caught up with his production. Another Georgia run to the college football playoff, though, might change that. Once again, that's Paul Meyerberg from USA Today. Now, the big difference I see between the way that the nation seems to view Jake Fromm and the way we seem to view him within the bubble of Dog Nation, specifically in the state of Georgia or kind of in the Atlanta media market where Dog Nation World Headquarters is located, Paul Meyerberg says, Fromm does all these things, but doesn't really get a lot of attention. Few people even notice, Meyerberg says, the success that Fromm has had. The reputation he has isn't equal to the huge production that he's put up. And obviously, locally, to me, it's a really, really different story with Jake Fromm. Fromm is one of the more well-known players I think Georgia's ever had, certainly within the kind of the modern history. You know, every player that puts on the red helmet, those silver britches, is going to be well-known in this state, but not all of them rise to the level of being a celebrity. I think that Fromm, in his own way, has kind of become a celebrity inside the state of Georgia. Nationally, Paul Meyerberg says, people don't even notice Fromm's exploits. He's not well known enough compared to how well he's played the position. But here in Georgia, he is as well known as any player Georgia has had in quite some time. Now, there's a funny thing that comes along with celebrity status. Sometimes celebrity status brings with it a degree of polarization. You're familiar with that word? It means that there are people kind of sometimes on both sides of the Jake Fromm debate. Some people say that Fromm is a great quarterback on his way to being even better, maybe the top quarterback in college football by the time this season's done, surpassing some of the guys who were on this list ahead of him. Other people say that Fromm still leaves something to be desired when it comes to the overall evaluation. Here's what I'm going to tell you, no matter what side of that debate you're on when it comes to Jake Fromm. The presence of polarization for Fromm is not necessarily proof of his shortcomings as a quarterback. Big-name celebrity-type athletes, or just sort of big-name celebrities in general, they always seem to bring about their own degree of polarization. They always seem to bring about their own degree of debate. I mean, look at LeBron James. This is not an NBA show. We don't talk basketball. But those of you who watch enough basketball are familiar with James enough to know that he's maybe the greatest player of all time. He may be the second greatest player of all time. He's one of the top players of all time. Yet if you watch cable television at any point in time, at any point during the season, they're debating LeBron all the time. So even the unquestioned greatness of LeBron James doesn't close the door to debate of he should have done this differently or whatever. You know, James is a great player. He is a celebrity, but he also brings with him a degree of polarization. I think for Fromm inside of the state of Georgia, it's kind of very much the same way. But there is something that could happen for Fromm this year, a degree of performance, a level of achievement that could, for the most part, kind of end the debate and kind of close the polarization of just how good Jake Fromm was, not just this in his final year, but looking back over the course of his next 3 years. I mean, after all, you want to make the comparison with some of the guys on this list. I mean, I mentioned before that Justin Herbert is ahead of Fromm on this USA Today list, but Herbert's got a big showdown early in the season against Auburn, kind of like the big showdown that Jake Fromm's going to have against Notre Dame. Fromm plays well against Notre Dame. Herbert doesn't play as well against Auburn, which is a possibility. There is a chance at that point in time that Fromm's kind of moving his way up this list to those people who are going to kind of keep a list like this working in their mind. Same way with a guy like Sam Ehlinger, who's got an early season showdown against a team like LSU. There's a chance that maybe Ehlinger doesn't play quite as well against the Tigers defense as Jake Fromm might play against the Notre Dame defense. So a couple of these quarterbacks who are rated ahead of Fromm right now, very early in the season, we may see some things that change that opinion. And very early in the season, Fromm's stature may grow in comparison to them. And that leaves the two guys that we've kind of always compared Jake Fromm to. Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. What's it going to take for Jake Fromm to surpass them? What's it going to take for Jake Fromm to be truly better in the minds of not just the draft public, the draft scouts, but just the college football fan in general, including those here in Dog Nation that quite haven't made up their mind yet about exactly how good Jake Fromm is? They've noticed him. They've seen every snap. They're just not quite sure what it all adds up to yet. What's it going to take for Fromm to surpass Tua Tagovailoa, to outplay him in a head-to-head matchup, or surpass Trevor Lawrence, potentially outplaying him in a head-to-head matchup? What's that going to take? Well, I think the answer to that's actually probably pretty simple. I think there's one thing that Fromm still has over these other guys that he ought to be able to use to his disposal this season. At least that's the hope anyway. For as good as Tua Tagovailoa is, he's not as experienced as Jake Fromm. Fromm's taken more snaps, been the starting quarterback for more games. That level of experience could matter this season. Certainly in comparison to Trevor Lawrence, Jake Fromm has played a good bit more football. Now, in the football that Lawrence and Tagovailoa have played, they've both done extremely well. But this could be a year from moving in to his junior season where that experience does truly matter. He knows the offense really well. So much so, as Kirby Smart explained a little earlier in the summer, that they're able to take some liberties with Fromm that a typical coach might not take with a typical quarterback. Here is what Kirby said about Fromm going back to a few weeks ago when he spoke in Macon.
I think Jake's doing a great job. I think he's got kind of some more quarterback guys around him with Coley going in there working with him. He's excited about that. I think for him, it's been a transition through the coordinator position where he's kind of a sponge. He's got more of an opinion now. He understands what we're trying to do offensively. So I think anytime you've got a three-year starter, he can give you input on the things he likes about the offense, the things he dislikes, the things he thinks can be successful. And that input's helpful. It's always helpful, but ultimately it's coaches, we got to decide what we're going to do.
I mean, listen to Kirby there. He says Fromm's been around enough now that he's got an opinion on this stuff. He knows the parts of the offense that he thinks works best, and even with James Coley taking over as offensive coordinator, the basic bones and structure of this offense isn't going to change a ton. Fromm knows it well enough now he can share some opinion. I believe that experience is the key, hopefully anyway, to surpassing Tua Tagovailoa or surpassing Trevor Lawrence and outplaying them potentially in a head-to-head matchup. But along the ways with that, the polarization here locally that surrounds Fromm not going to change. He's still going to have his share of critics. He's still going to have his share of questions about what's going to happen on the biggest possible stage and what could be Fromm's final year. Here's the great news, though. I think that Jake Fromm is put together mentally in such a way that he can handle all of this. Jake Fromm doesn't shy away from the attention of being the most important position on the most important team in the state of Georgia. It's not the kind of thing that makes Fromm nervous. That's not the kind of thing that makes Fromm bashful. Fromm, I think, welcomes the spotlight, and I don't think it does a whole lot to him to change his demeanor or change the way that he goes about playing the position. I think that's good news as he gets ready to begin what's going to be obviously a pivotal season for him. In fact, before last year's SEC championship game, he kind of talked a little bit about this, the fact that part of being good at this position and part of succeeding at the highest level is to kind of just be relaxed and take all of this as it comes. I like these words from Fromm. Take a listen to this.
You just gotta be comfortable in your own skin. And know what you do well, what you don't do well. Just try to do what you do well better than the other guy. I love being able to compete. You have the opportunity that I've been given. I just try to come out and be the best I can be.
So listen, USA Today says Jake Fromm does all these things and few people have noticed. That may be true nationally. That's not true in the state of Georgia, where Fromm gets a lot of attention and sometimes from some pockets of the fan base, not always positive. But as I said before, Jake Fromm, based on what he just said right there, being comfortable in his own skin, is relaxed and confident and able to handle all of this, including the step up in expectations that are going to occur for him here in 2019 and the experience that he has at his disposal in a head-to-head matchup with Tua Tagovailoa or Trevor Lawrence. If that were to come along the way in the college football playoff, my guess is Fromm's story is far from written in this season. We may see a few fun chapters added to that book. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world famous DogNation.com. And boy, you talk about being excited. We kick off this week incredibly excited around here because this is the week where it all gets going. Our Dog Nation Days of Summer that we've been telling you so much about. This week is the week that the first of these big events goes down. It's Thursday, going to be at Callaway Resort and Gardens. You've been hearing me tell you about this for a while. So I kind of want to drill down now and kind of get more into the details, the specifics of it, whether you're kind of in that West Georgia area and you're driving over for the day, or whether you're in the Atlanta area or somewhere else and you're just kind of coming in for the night. Let's go ahead and start talking about some of the specific plans for that event so you can be fully aware of everything that's going to be going on. First of all, the good news is that on the day you check in to the lodge there at Callaway Resort and Gardens and the day you check out, you get admission to the gardens included to your little situation there. So at 9 a.m. on that Thursday, your garden admission does begin for those of you who are staying overnight. You'll be able to get into the gardens, tour those, enjoy that, and then you'll kind of be on your own during the day there. Kaysen's, the tap room where we're going to be having Dog Nation Days of Summer. It opens up at 2 p.m. so you can get relaxed and get a seat, enjoy some beverages and some food and hang out. And then at 4 p.m., if you're staying at the lodge there overnight, you get a chance to check in there and get settled in your room. And then for those of you who are staying, or for those of you who are able to get a couple of the tickets we had for the VIP reception, that begins at 5 p.m. there at Kaysen's Tap Room there that night. It'll be a kind of a casual atmosphere. We'll be talking, we'll be chatting, as I said, enjoying some beverages in the sun and the summer and everything else. Kaysen's Tap Room is a really cool place to host this venue. That's going to be there. Then the official event begins at 6 p.m. That's with me, Dog Nation's own recruiting insider Jeff Sintel, the former UGA All-American John Stinchcomb. All of that gets going at 6 p.m., and then after that, who knows how long we'll end up going. But the night itself there at Kaysen's gets going there at 6 p.m. If you're not able to be with us, we will have a show going on that night as well. You can check that out on the Dog Nation video channels. But hanging out and having a really good time there at 6 p.m. Now, the next day, we'll do Dog Nation Daily Live from the lakeside there in the morning. And for those of you who've already signed up, you can be a part of the golf that we're going to get going around noon there as well. So it's a busy time for us on Thursday and Friday. If you didn't get your question answered by what I just said there, the way to find out more information now in this kind of late hours we get close to it, send us an email to dognationhelp@gmail.com. It's dognationhelp@gmail.com. You can find out more information about that. We'll get Chip Towers here coming up in just a moment. Can't wait to see all of you at Callaway Resort and Gardens coming up this Thursday. Let me change the subject for a minute, though, before I bring in Chip, because there was something really cool that I saw over the weekend. ESPN does its preseason top 25, and they kind of listed the top tradition for each of these schools. And I was a little bit surprised to see what they put for Georgia, although I guess somewhat pleasantly surprised. According to ESPN, the top tradition for UGA is the so-called light up Sanford that you see at the start of the fourth quarter for all the night games. Yeah, if you're watching in video, you can kind of see a little video of this, kind of a cool shot. The cell phones come out, the lights come out, they play the Krypton theme, the Redcoat Band does, and everybody does their deal there with the, you know, the lights going up and down. It is one of the coolest things, I think, in all of college football. To experience it live is one of the best things you'll ever get a chance to be a part of. Sanford Stadium's never been better than when this is going on. It's a ton of fun. And for me in particular, it's also fun when Georgia's not in Sanford Stadium. You know, the 2017 season where Georgia made its run all the way to the college football playoff, won the Rose Bowl, came within an eyelash winning the national championship. For me in particular, the single most memorable moment from that 2017 season was the light up Sanford that didn't happen at Sanford Stadium, but the light up to start the fourth quarter that actually happened at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend, Indiana. That's when I got the full picture of just how many Georgia fans were in the building that day at Notre Dame, just how much red and black had traveled in, and just how big Dog Nation Invasion had become, the first ever Dog Nation Invasion, just how big that had become. That's my ultimate memory of that season, and that's one of the reasons why I like seeing the tradition being honored by ESPN the way that it did. I thought Alex Scarborough had a great line on this when it comes to that. He says, right before the start of the fourth quarter, when everyone turns on their cell phone, the flashlights, the red coat band plays the Krypton fanfare. It truly is a sight to behold. It has been in Athens now for a number of years. It was in South Bend, Indiana back in 2017. No telling where all we'll see that in 2019. And speaking of that trip to Notre Dame, I liked Kirby Smart's phrasing of this after it was over. For the fans who had lit up the stadium and made so much noise throughout, well, Kirby Smart threw a huge compliment their way as well.
I tell you what I'm proud of. I'm proud of our fans. I'm proud of the fact they came out and tons of them were here. The video shots I saw from Chicago before the game and the takeover when we got here, you know, that played a role in this game. That we never felt like it was so much of a road game. I mean, there was time our quarterback was able to go on his own cadence, which you don't usually get to do on the road. Definitely don't get to do on the road in the SEC. Fan base don't let you do that. We were able to go on ours, and I think a lot of it had to do with the red and black that was in the stadium.
Yeah, the red and black filled that stadium, made it a home game for Georgia. The lineup looked great to start the fourth quarter. It's looked great in Sanford Stadium every night game since then. And as I said before, we should see a few really nice instances of that coming up this season as well. Let me, by the way, talk to you about my friends at Kroger here for a moment. Make sure that as you head towards Father's Day weekend this weekend, that you remember that you can plan the perfect meal for your dad right there at Kroger. Whether it be pork back ribs, brats, Italian sausage, ice cream, and, of course, terrapin beer, Sweetwater beer, it's all there for you at Kroger. And you get huge savings when you use your card. So check that out at your local Kroger. All right, I'm going to talk some recruiting later on, including an update on Kendall Milton and a whole lot more. We'll do that here still to come on Dog Nation Daily. But on a Monday, let's talk to our buddy Chip Towers right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
A lot to get into with Chip Towers here on Dog Nation Daily here today. We will talk later on about the kind of weird news as it continues to unfold involving former Georgia tight end Luke Ford and his battle with the NCAA that he has now seemingly lost. We'll do that coming up. I'll get Chip's thoughts on what we were just discussing when it comes to the traditions around Sanford Stadium. But Chip, if you don't mind, let me talk about Jake Fromm with you before we get to any of that. Would you agree with what I said earlier on the show that when you look nationally, Paul Meyerberg from USA Today says that few people have noticed the success that Jake Fromm has had, that maybe nationally Fromm's a better player than his national reputation would suggest. And I said, you compare that locally, where I think that Fromm is among the most well-known players that Georgia's had maybe in decades. To me, it seems like the local perception of Fromm, the national perception of Fromm, still continues to be pretty different. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. It would be interesting for me to sort of do a survey, you know, so regionally and find out, you know, what the opinions are from coast to coast. And, you know, as always is the case, really, no matter what, you know, you're going to have regional bias. I mean, you know, guys in the Midwest are going to think Shea Patterson is a better quarterback generally because they see him every day than perhaps, you know, Jake Fromm is or somebody from another part of the country. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all semantics and opinions, and it really doesn't matter. And you know, the guys who you know, get down in the weeds and examine quarterbacks, who you know, are considering drafting quarterbacks, who are judging quarterbacks or who they want to start versus, you know, the other players in competition, you know, that's where the objectivity comes in. And you know, when it comes to the objective standpoint, you know, there's not a whole lot to argue with Jake Fromm. You know, he's run off a couple of five-star quarterbacks who are competing with him. He's, you know, what is it, 25-4, you know, is Georgia's starting quarterback. You know, it's not just not a whole lot to argue with in that regard. And so, you know, it's not really apples and oranges, but, you know, different teams run different systems, different quarterbacks play different ways, people have different styles. You know, I mean, you look at Matt Stafford when he was at Georgia, you know, it's probably not any question that Matt Stafford, you know, certainly, you know, overall is a better quarterback than Jake Fromm, right? And had some better skill sets, but he didn't win more than Jake Fromm did. And same thing with like David Green and Matthew Stafford. you know, who won more? Well, David Green by a mile. Well, is he the better quarterback? No, not necessarily. The quarterback position is just fascinating.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's maybe a pitcher in baseball, but there's just not many other positions where you have so much control, and then the opinions are so varied about, you know, who's better than whom.
So what I said earlier was that Fromm's, I believe, best chance of finishing, if we were to take for the assumption a moment that 2019 might be his last year, he leaves after his junior season. Doors open for him to return, obviously, but he could leave after this season. If for the sake of conversation, if we say that he does leave after this season, what I said is for him to be viewed as the best quarterback in college football, to surpass a Trevor Lawrence, to surpass a Tua Tagovailoa, the number one club he might have in his bag to enable that to happen, I believe, is his experience. Even though that, you know, he comes in the same year as Tua Tagovailoa, he still played more football. He is clearly more experienced than Trevor Lawrence, although Lawrence did something last year that Fromm still hasn't done when he won his national championship. Kirby's remarked about the Fromm experience a lot this offseason, including a few weeks ago when you were there with him in Macon. I think that experience might be the thing that, if he's going to surpass Tua and Trevor, using that experience might be the best way for that to happen. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, and it's also going to come down to how things happen, you know, because, you know, let's face it, you know, Georgia has, as we know at this moment in time, you know, two strong Heisman candidates, and that's, you know, DeAndre Swift and Jake Fromm. And you know, I mean, you and I have watched Georgia enough to know that if Georgia wins at the highest level, which that's the only way you're going to get in these conversations for national awards, it's going to be because both of those players play at a very, very high level. I definitely think Georgia's going to try to throw the ball around more. And just because you have DeAndre Swift in the backfield, I think, is a reason that they're going to throw it more. I mean, you got to throw the ball to that guy, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to help Jake Fromm's stats. I remember him so honest about this kind of stuff. But, you know, sometimes a guy throws a 2-yard hitch pattern and he gets a 98-yard, you know, pass completion out of it. So, did the quarterback do something great when he threw a 2-yard hitch? Not necessarily, but that guy that went 98 yards with it definitely did. So it's just all those factors come into it. The bottom line is the one you alluded to first. I mean, you got to win at a high, high level. And, how do you win? We'll see. We'll play it out. But generally, if Georgia's going to have a great year in 2019, that's going to probably mean, you know, 1,600 yards from DeAndre Swift. That's what I see. And if he's got a 1,600-yard season, Georgia will be putting up a lot of numbers and a lot of yards. But that's also going to translate into a 3,000-yard passing effort from Jake Fromm. So these are great problems to have, Brandon, and these are great things in June to debate.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, they work themselves out quite obviously usually.
I want to talk about something serious here in a moment, but before we get to that, I hope you don't mind, I want to talk about something completely not serious, but what I think is kind of fun. ESPN recently ranked the light up Sanford thing as Georgia's top tradition, and it's kind of cool, I guess, to see kind of a recent tradition pop on here. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that there weren't, you know, cell phones prevalent in the stadium, and certainly even in the cell phone age, there was plenty of time when Georgia wasn't doing the light up thing, but it's now, according to ESPN, something they want to, you know, view Georgia as being somewhat famous for. If you had to rank Georgia's top tradition, you've been around for a long time, you've seen a lot of this kind of stuff, I reckon I probably would have said before ESPN said this, it's probably still, for me, the live animal mascot. It's probably still Uga, because, you know, Uga kind of stands out. There aren't a lot of live animal mascots in college football anymore, and Uga kind of stands out kind of stately among the rest. That's probably the direction I would have gone. I like the light up thing. To me, it's a little too recent to really be considered a tradition. It's kind of more of a fun, recent addition to the Georgia game day atmosphere. When you think about the kind of catalog of Georgia traditions, what comes to your mind before anything else?
Well, the one more than any that I think is very, very unique to Georgia, that I think is beautiful, and I hear from, you know, my friends who are diehard Georgia fans, is the trumpet playing in on the south side in the pregame ceremonies. I mean, that's a huge one. That's the one that gives fans chills as they're getting ready for the game, and you don't see it anywhere else. And of course, they play all the highlights, and Larry Munson in tandem with that, and the rest of the band joins in after the trumpet solo. I haven't seen one like that anywhere else. Auburn certainly, you hear a lot of people talk about unique things. How many people have an eagle fly down? I actually think there's more than Auburn. I think there's at least one other who does something like that, but that's certainly unique. But then you get in the argument about War Eagle. Is that really a mascot? Wait a minute. Are you a tiger? Are you an eagle? And all that kind of stuff. But Georgia has a lot of them, and that's the great. I think that's one of the great things about Georgia, is just all their traditions. You talk about the light up thing, and Georgia gets credit for turning this and personalizing this. They're not the only ones who use the light up phones, and some other programs have tried to emulate it since then. But it's so funny how far cell phones have come, right? Because I remember, some of my first cell phones, I think you had to upload a flashlight app. And then, for a while, I didn't know, how do I find my flashlight? How do I get that? But, that's all. I've seen it's the proudest thing, I think, among Georgia is you see some white-haired people who haven't been long to have their cell phones. They've got theirs beaming just as bright as the young freshman over there who could do things on their phone they not only dreamed of at one time. It's a pretty cool tradition, and Georgia's owning it right now.
And I will say, that, as I said to our audience before you joined us, that when I saw that take place, not just in Athens the times we've seen it, but in South Bend that day, that's when I really get the full picture of just truly how many Georgia fans there were in that stadium. Because let's face it, it was a low-scoring game. There weren't always tons of moments to cheer through the first three quarters of that game. But when you saw all those cell phones come out and you realize this is Georgia fans who were doing this, you really get the full picture of just how many Georgia fans there were that day. So the light-up thing for me ends up being a big memory from games outside of Athens and not just the ones that have been played in Sanford Stadium recently.
Yeah, well, as you recall, I went up to South Bend earlier this year, and that Georgia's whole thing that day made an impact on Notre Dame fans as well, and not just Notre Dame fans. I think Tommy Kramer was his name, great offensive lineman that will be coming back to Athens this year, and we'll get to see the. But he told me in an interview up there, he thought that the coolest thing he had seen was that light up thing Georgia does. And so it took notice not just from those of us in the press box and the 40,000 plus or so Georgia fans that were in there, but even Notre Dame players are looking at me. And he said, there was a conversation. I was telling him, what are they doing? That's a fantastic impact. And it's going to be really neat when Notre Dame comes back and gets to see that again. Hopefully Georgia will have a lead heading into the fourth quarter at that time.
So let me finish with this. There was kind of some interesting news over the weekend where former Georgia tight end Luke Ford, who had initially been denied his chance for immediate eligibility at Illinois upon transferring from Georgia, had his appeal denied as well. This is after taking on the services of a big-time, high-powered attorney to try to argue on his behalf, but none of this ends up working out for Ford. Now, the unique subplot to all this, Chip, as you know, are the way in which Georgia fans have seemingly rallied around Ford in the hope that he might get to play right away. They seem to buy his story in all of this, that he was homesick in Athens, he wanted to go back to Illinois and be close to his ailing grandparent that's ailing there. He wanted to do all that. That seems to be good enough for Georgia fans. They wanted to see Ford rewarded by the NCAA, but that did not happen. Chip, what do you make of this story as it stands now? What it means about the NCAA, what it means about Ford in comparison to guys like Justin Fields and Tate Martell, this seems to be, for the average fan, a fairly confusing situation of why so much leniency for some and so strict on others. How do you take this?
Well, I mean, the way I take it is just that there's more change on the way in the NCAA, I believe. I think the transfer portal has been one step in the right direction when it comes to, players' individual rights, student athletes, as it were, individual rights, period. And I think eventually, and I don't know how long this is going to take, and I'm sure it'll get resistance from some coaches and ADs to start with. But I think in the future there's going to be a first-time transfer exception for everybody. A first-time, one-time transfer exception for everybody, because it has gotten a little bit ridiculous. And Look, you got to understand the dynamics and really the process that goes on here. And the biggest thing dogging Luke Ford and Brock Hoffman as well is just the nature of their transfers. And, you know, at the end of the day, these are bureaucracies. And we're talking about, filling in boxes on forms, and you know, people express the same frustration when it comes to our federal government, and it's kind of the same way. These laws are made. The laws are made by the membership. You have to fill out forms based on what you did. In the case of both Brock Hoffman and Luke Ford, you know, they went with the family hardship waiver, and that just limits you. Completely. There's this thought that there's all this latitude that some committee has, but it doesn't. And even when you appeal in the cases of these hardship things, as I understand it, you're appealing to the same committee that just made that decision. So, you know, you're throwing it back to some guys like, you want to change your mind? Well, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's going to go back to them and go, nah, I don't want to change my mind. Mm-hmm. The law is still the law. You're dealing basically with, if not full-fledged lawyers, you're dealing with people who are averse, are adhere to certain laws, whether they be ones passed by the Constitution, passed by the NCAA membership. And so, you know, I mean, that doesn't make anybody feel about anything. I'm going to have some more stuff. I've had some conversations with Thomas Mars this morning. I'm going to weigh in on it and try to explain a little bit, like, what's the difference in Justin Fields and Luke Ford or Brock Hoffman. But the bottom line is you know, which box you check, and that can really change a lot of things going down the line. And that's kind of where we've ended up with Luke Ford.
Well, Chip, we'll certainly look forward to reading that from you at DogNation.com. This is an unusual story, and it has implications even beyond Ford's future there at Illinois for a lot of these players contemplating future moves. How Ford goes could determine how they handle their situation moving forward as well. So we'll follow your reporting on that, and we'll look forward to hopefully catching up with you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
Okay, always enjoy our time, Brad.
Thank you, Chip.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Let me say two quick things about Luke Ford, and then I want to move on and talk some recruiting here for a moment. And one of these statements, admittedly, is not going to be popular. First of all, when I compare Luke Ford to Justin Fields, there's all these situations that may, you know, scream about one of the field situations seemingly was different than Ford, and certainly Tate Martell seemingly at Miami different from Ford. The one thing I don't hear people say enough, though, is that Ford was transferring to Illinois. That is not a college football blue blood. Fields was transferring to Ohio State. That is a college football blue blood. I'm sure Chip, when he writes his piece, is going to have a lot of the legal minutia covered and all of that, and I'm sure there's legal reasoning that can at least be used, if cover, if not anything else, for why these things get done. I typically try to look at things simply in life, and going to Ohio State and having the force of the Ohio State program behind you seems to make things easier for Fields in comparison to going to Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, where you don't quite have as much cachet going on. I have a hard time believing that Ford wasn't somewhat penalized for the fact that Illinois just doesn't throw a lot of weight around the college football universe, and that Fields being in Ohio State kind of does. You may say the same thing about Miami as well, a former multi-time national champion when it comes to Tate Martell. But those situations were just a little bit different. Here's the other thing, though, about this that admittedly is not going to be popular. There are going to be some coaches privately who will be glad upon hearing this story about Luke Ford that he got turned down. No one's ever going to say that publicly because it seems like incredibly heavy-handed and short-sighted for the NCAA to deny this appeal to Ford, who seemingly truly wanted to go back to the state of Illinois for the reasons that he stated. Privately, some coaches are going to be glad about this, though, because it might serve as a way of disincentivizing future transfers, at least for some people who might have been on the bubble. So this is kind of an ugly story for Ford. He doesn't get what he wants. He seems to have been seemingly treated unfairly by the NCAA. but some coaches will be glad this happened because they can now look to their players and say, if you try to transfer, you may not get eligibility. Just look and see what happened to a Luke Ford there. It's probably a fair point to at least mention. By the way, before we do the SEC through, let me remind you about my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, the structural integrity of your house is one of the most important things to be mindful of. So if you have a cracked foundation or a wet spot in your basement, kind of a damp crawl space, something that looks like water may be coming in, you want to give Engineered Solutions a call at 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. They have experts. They have a full-time engineer on staff. So any of those issues you might be dealing with, Engineered Solutions of Georgia is the source to make sure it all gets fixed the way that it's supposed to be. All right, few recruiting stories here. Kendall Milton, the five-star running back, is obviously coming to Athens this weekend. He's talked about that on Twitter. He was at LSU this past weekend. We know that because, well, we already knew it, but Milton made it official on Twitter by showing some pictures. Honesty compels me to admit, the purple LSU jersey and the gold pants that you see on your screen, that's a pretty nice-looking uniform. I will admit that. I don't like seeing Milton wear it, but that is a pretty good uniform. And unlike Georgia's recruits who always take pictures in their alternate black jersey, at least LSU actually wears this purple jersey every now and then. But Milton was there. I haven't really heard a ton of buzz one way or another about Milton being in Baton Rouge. I don't know what that means necessarily. Some of this stuff will come out over the course of the next couple days. That's about how long it took some of that kind of stuff to come out of Columbus, where the Buckeyes fans thought they had won the recruitment for Milton, and Chris Milton had to kind of put them back in their place on that. We'll see if there's any kind of talk like that that comes out of Baton Rouge. Thus far, it seems to have been pretty quiet on Milton being an LSU. There was a busy weekend for South Carolina when it comes to recruiting. How about a total of, what, four commits over the weekend? One of those is a name you've probably heard of, Alex Huntley, the high school teammate of Jordan Burch, and a name that Jeff Centella has at least written about one or two times as a potential defensive line guy that Georgia could have been in the mix for. Well, Huntley does commit to South Carolina this weekend. And this is an example of Muschamp, man, he does pretty well with some of these defensive line type recruits. You know, Muschamp's a good defensive mind, and as a recruiter, he's pretty good. I mean, I think there's a lot of examples that he's doing better recruiting in some respects than on an individual basis than Florida is, even though Florida had the higher rated class a year ago. You know, he's leveraging some of those relationships. He's brought in a guy like Zach Pickens. Pickens probably going to be a big player for the South Carolina defensive line this year. You know, getting the commitment from Huntley this weekend. This is a pretty good job that Will Muschamp is doing, kind of putting this 2020 class in some pretty good shape there for South Carolina. So Gamecocks have a busy weekend, four commits overall, including a guy that you've probably heard of in Alex Huntley. Trenton Simpson, a linebacker we've talked about from North Carolina, has announced his commitment date. Now, the timing on all of this coming up this weekend, how about this fancy? This is a really cool announcement. It almost looks like a wedding announcement or something like that. It's Friday, June 14th is when it's going to take place. Mallard Creek, of course, the same school that produced Jordan Davis. Georgia's had some success there before. Georgia had been thought at one point in time to be in the mix for Simpson. But the date coming out when it is pretty much, I think, eliminates Georgia from discussion here, because Simpson was supposed to be visiting Georgia coming up, and now the commitment's already scheduled, so that means that he's likely not going to Georgia. Could be going to Auburn. He was just at Auburn not too long ago. So a pretty big-time linebacker guy who had included Georgia in his list of finalists would appear to be set to commit without taking that big Georgia visit. So that's probably the end on that. And one final story, and I'm not going to make too big of a deal about this because I don't like picking on recruits, whether they be, you know, potential Georgia recruits or not. But Florida took a commitment over the weekend from an offensive lineman whose name is Gerald Mincy's his name. Now, here's the stats on Mincy. This is the number 102 offensive tackle in the class of 2020 and the number 139 overall recruit in the state of Florida, according to the 24/7 composite database. Now, he may go on to become the next John Hanna, for all I know. This may be, you know, just the greatest offensive lineman in the history of the universe. But for those people who want to tell you that Florida's got major recruiting momentum and going to be a big threat to the Dogs on the field anytime soon, I think examples like this, where you're taking players kind of really far outside the typical footprint of what Florida would, you know, think to be chasing down as recruits, certainly back when Will Muschamp was head coach, these aren't the kinds of recruitments, the kinds of commitments that Florida was in the business of taking. And that leads you to believe that the national media trying to spin its yarn about the momentum that Dan Mullen has at Florida, the constituency that should be most impressed by all this, the recruits in the 2020 class, as it stands right now, they are not buying that. I think that's a big-time tell for what Florida's not going to do in comparison to what some of the national media would believe, lead you to believe is a possibility. And I think that's worth remembering. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, you know, one of the things I like to do is during the summertime of year, give us a little bit of room at the end of the show to kind of take some comments and chat. And for those of you watching live on video, you get a chance to be a part of this. And if you're listening on the radio or the podcast, many of you will send your responses in via Twitter to me, at Dog Nation Daily. A lot of you chat this stuff up on the forum at forum.dognation.com. It's our summer Q&A, and of course this week we're especially excited about summer because we're heading towards our kickoff of Dog Nation Days of Summer on Thursday at Callaway Resort and Gardens. But some time to kind of relax and just take some comments and give you a chance to weigh in on what you think on today's topics around the show. So here are our summer Q&A questions for today, and we'll get your comments on these. First of all, I started the show by talking a little bit about Jake Fromm. USA Today ranks Fromm fifth among college quarterbacks heading into the start of the 2019 season. Where do you think Fromm belongs on that list? You can get a chance to weigh in on that. You heard Chip and I talking about Georgia's best tradition after ESPN called the light up Sanford, Georgia's top tradition. What do you think the Dogs' top tradition is? Chip actually had a pretty good thing to mention there as well when it comes to the trumpet and the battle hymn of the Bulldog Nation that kind of kicks off the game. That was a pretty good mention there from Chip on that. You can kind of weigh in on your thoughts on that, too, for those of you especially who are part of these traditions at Sanford Stadium each week in the fall. And on the topic of Luke Ford, do you think Ford got a raw deal from the SEC? You can weigh in on all that. We'll take those questions and comments as a part of our summer Q&A for today, and we certainly appreciate your comments. By the way, let's get in here and get a few more comments. By the way, Philip Jordan Wales on the subject of Trenton Simpson making his announcement says maybe that means that Georgia's made some headway with Justin Flo, another linebacker and a guy that's actually rated higher than Simpson is. And Phillip could be right about that, that maybe the absence of Simpson, the fact that he's getting ready to choose without being a part of a Georgia visit, maybe that means that Georgia does feel pretty good about guys like Justin Flo and others. On the subject of the top Georgia traditions, John Pern Williams says that his favorite Georgia tradition is the dog walk. And I think that's a really good one. Now, listen, just about every program in the SEC has its own version of that, and I guess maybe Auburn was among the first that did that. Maybe Tennessee was as well. They've been, you know, both doing theirs for a real long time. But I've grown to really love the dog walk. We broadcast as a part of our Kroger kickoff before each game. They do a pretty good job of also doing these on the road as well. I love the way the players interact with the young fans, the children, as they kind of walk the aisles there and walk the railings there. I miss the days back when they used to wear their uniforms for this. The suits and ties make it a little less festive for me, I will admit, but it's still a ton of fun. The dog walk is a tremendous, tremendous tradition and a really good answer here. Lawson Mullins, who's a senior at UGA, checking in to talk about Brian Herrians. How much bigger of a role is he going to have? Lawson, I think there's a really good chance that Brian Herrian has a gigantic role for this Georgia team this season. Much the same way that Elijah Holyfield bided his time and was rewarded in 2018. I think that Brian Herrian could be the kind of guy that has a similar storyline unfold for him in 2019. Patience could be rewarded in a big way, and Herrian could be one of Georgia's top backs. In fact, I expect that he will be. All right, so if you're watching on video, we'll take more of your comments on this coming up in just a moment. Anything from our summer Q&A or anything you want to discuss as a part of our R.S. Andrews cool down. And, of course, if you're not a part of the show live, if you're part of our radio audience on 960 The Ref or the podcast audience on one of the various podcast channels, you can also always hit us up at Dog Nation Bailey on Twitter. That's always a great way to be a part of this discussion. I'll do our Gator Hater Updater in just a moment. I also noticed over the last couple of days that much the same way that Jake Fromm and former Georgia quarterback Justin Fields were once kind of highlighted and profiled on this QB1 documentary, I guess the next guy to do this, Carson Beck, going to get his chance to be featured on this. That should be a lot of fun. I think that Beck's a pretty interesting guy, and a lot of us have learned a lot about him quickly after he became a Georgia commit. This will be a good way to get to know a whole lot more about him. By the way, speaking of Beck's home state, Florida, 954 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's good news. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.